of the TFD Performance Podcast. I'm joined by a TFD Performance Dietitian, the Dojo Dietitian, aka Mr. Ryan Hassel, aka the Mustache, which has made a comeback for 2024. Big Doge, welcome back.
People are cheering everywhere. Thanks, Jordy. Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, so really interesting topic for today. I think interesting is the right word because this topic is probably the one we talk about the most outside of all of our sports nutrition, and it infiltrates everything that we do, and that is fasting. Quite controversial. Some people are absolutely pro-fasting. Some people are absolutely against it. What we want to do in this episode is give you guys a bit more of an objective scientific standpoint. Then what we're going to do is mesh in our own experience doing this with thousands and thousands of different clients, not just athletes, but everyday people. And we're going to talk to you about when it is appropriate to use fasting and when it may not be appropriate to use fasting. But just to kick us off, Doge, just give us a quick rundown. What is fasting?
That's a good question, Jordy. And I think at the end of the day, it's one of the things that makes doing research into fasting so difficult is the fact that there's so many different things that fit under the category of like what is fasting. But in a nutshell, it's really just like abstaining from any sort of food or sometimes drinks and things as well for like a certain period of time. Now, whatever that period of time is really depends on what protocol you're following. And there's like basically an endless number out there. But there are a few sort of main types of fasting that have been researched and are kind of like everyone kind of debates about which one's the right one to do or whatever. But the main ones there are going to be your time restricted eating. So this is your fasting sort of every day for a certain amount of time during the day. So some common ones that you might have heard about would be like the 16-8 fast, where people will fast for 16 hours and then just have like an 8-hour window where they eat. Another similar one is like Ramadan. It's basically a form of time restricted eating where people that follow the Islamic religion will fast for a certain month of the year, where it's more so based on like the time of the day. So they'll fast from like dusk till dawn till dusk, and then eat sort of like after dark. Now, it's not always like time restricted in the same way where you're blocking off an exact amount of time, but it's more just in the sense of following the day and night rhythms. Then you have alternate day fasting. Now, this is where people will eat basically whatever they want with like no restriction for a day, and then the next day not eat anything at all, or eat like massively reduced amount of calories, like maybe like 300, 500 calories, something like that. And then it basically gives them the ability to eat whatever they want on the days when they are eating, and then really cut back on the days that they're not. And then you have ones that have, I guess, been a bit more popularized recently, which is like the 5-2 fast or the 6-1 fast, where you're fasting you're eating for 5 days out of the week and then fasting for two, or eating for 6 days and fasting for one. Sometimes they've been like rebranded to things like, you might have heard like the Dana White one, if you're a UFC fan, doing like the 72-hour water fast or 48-hour water fast, things like that. These kind of fit into that category where you're blocking out like 1 to maybe 3 days where you're not eating or eating like a minimal amount, maybe just drinking like electrolytes and things like that, to do this prolonged fast. So those are the main sort of categories. Now, there's a bunch of different reasons, I guess, why people would do these. Do you want to kind of take us through some of the common ones that you hear, Jordy?
Yeah, when I get people coming to me, the biggest one by far absolutely blows everything else out of the water is weight loss. Come to me and they go, you know what, I want to lose weight, so I start fasting. And I guess, Doge, you would have heard this too, but explain to people why that often does work, because the fact of the reality is it does work, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's pretty good evidence that the whichever fasting protocol you're following will result in some sort of weight loss over time. And when you think about it, it makes sense, because like with any of these methods that we talked about, what you're really doing is just shrinking down the amount of time that you can eat food and get calories in. And then so as a result, people just end up eating less calories than they normally would, especially if they're not doing any form of tracking, because now they're just condensed to this shorter time window to eat. And then over time, they're just going to lose weight. Yeah, so I think it's definitely the case that people will lose weight, but it's maybe not for some of the like more magical reasons that people would hear about. It really just comes back to that idea of shrinking that time window and thus reducing the amount of calories you're getting in.
Yeah.
Now, oh,
I
sorry, go
think
ahead.
important to mention as well is that although it is super effective for the reasons that Doge just mentioned, that you are literally just restricting the amount of time that you eat. And some people really struggle to get, say, 2,300 calories or 2,000 calories in these eating windows that they set themselves. So that pretty much just creates an environment where you can fit your deficit in. You don't have to track too strictly. What we often see, though, when people are doing it for weight loss reasons is the complete opposite, is that they end up in these crazy binge episodes because they're not following certain protocols that, say, we would encourage, where we would say, hey, pace your protein throughout the day, get lots of fiber and veggie to make you feel full. And we're doing that to stimulate certain appetite hormones so that you're feeling fuller for longer. So even if you're in a calorie deficit, you're not feeling so hungry, you don't get all those effects and those results when you're doing these fasting and these minimized eating windows. And what that often leads to is these extreme binging episodes. So we get people who do the 16 to 8 and then they get to nighttime. And even though they've only got a couple hours to eat, they eat 3, 4, 5,000 calories because they're just so hungry and they're not really in tune with these appetite signals. Or they'll do the fasting throughout the week and then Saturday, Sunday is just outrageous. So yes, it can help with weight loss. And we've seen it if it can be controlled. But more often than not, I would say in my clinical practice, I've seen it go the other way where guys are completely just going off the rails, binging. And what it comes down to, like Doge said, can you control the amount of calories that you're getting in each day and then over the week? If fasting is a good way for you to do that, then power to you. But if I have to bet my bottom dollar, it's probably not going to go that way. You're probably going to go straight to binge city.
Yeah, and I think that's like there's kind of two slippery slopes that you could run into there, where it's like the main reason why people do it for weight loss in my experience is just that it's easier than having to track your calories, having to plan everything out, which it is. Like it just gives you a simple solution. You can be like, okay, tomorrow I'm not going to eat, and then the next day like I'll eat whatever. And that's fine, but you're absolutely right, because like on the days when you are eating or during the time periods that you are eating, if you have no idea of like what your targets are, like you said, especially if you're not already in tune with like maybe being more attentive with your eating and mindful and that kind of thing, or just having a general idea of what your body needs, like it is very easy to just kind of like blow out and then get into this cycle. And that kind of leads into the second sort of danger point there is, if you are already someone who maybe struggles with, you know, your relationship with food, maybe with ideas around like body image and all that kind of thing, there can be a lot of like shame associated with that as well, where you get to like the end, you've done the fast and then you eat, but now all of a sudden you're so starving that you can't stop eating, and then you get into this like weird headspace, and then you kind of like see yourself, and there's like a lot of shame and stuff involved in that as well, and then you just want to restrict for even longer, and then it turns from being this like controlled form of weight loss or like health thing that you started out as, and it can really morph into this really like nasty, dangerous thing. And I'm sure as practitioners, we've all kind of experienced the back end of that, Geordie. How's your experience been with that?
Yeah, I think just recently I'll share this story. I think it's fun because it's quite powerful, right? I shared it with the team, and I'm sure this person wouldn't mind me sharing, where they reached out to me and said, hey, you know what? I need to give you a big thank you because a lot of your content has really helped me over the years. I spent 4 years in and out of hospital battling with an extreme eating disorder, which came off the back of being addicted to intermittent fasting. And this person quite literally just did exactly what Dojo said, is that they were trying to restrict their calories. They were trying to control their weight. And in that, got in this crazy binge restrict cycle. So they would restrict, 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 and go on these crazy binges. And then that was building up all this negative connotations with their mental health. And that was just getting worse and worse and worse, to the point where they developed anorexia. And then they had to go to hospital, in and out of hospital for 4 years. And it wasn't until they got more educated about these type of things. Well, they need to understand how many calories they need to properly fuel their body. What are the benefits of, say, eating regularly throughout the day, which a lot of people demonize and don't talk about? Or, why is it important to eat throughout your day and ensure that you get good, adequate micronutrients? Why is that important for your physical and mental health? And once she educated herself about all of those things, she was able to make a more educated opinion and say, you know what? maybe intermittent fasting isn't good for, especially for my situation where I know I'm having extreme mental health issues with food. Maybe intermittent fasting is terrible for me. And that's the conclusion she came to. And thankfully, and this is what she said, is by using our advice around this, she was able to get herself out of that. She said, I used to read your content when I lay in my hospital bed, and it made a lot more sense than what a lot of the people around me would say. She ended up running half marathons, full marathons, and even hiked to Everest Base Camp. So it's a really cool story. And that's a very extreme example. And that's not just to demonize fasting, but I think we don't often hear that when people talk about fasting. We go, oh, you know, it's like so great. You hear about your mom's friend or your aunt that did it for a couple of weeks and lost some weight, and then they put it all back on, but they never talk about that. You only ever hear like the good things about it, but it can really, really, really be harmful if used the wrong way.
Yeah, and I think that's the really important thing to touch on here, is like, while it can be effective and it does work in a way to like reduce weight, and that brings with it all of the benefits of weight loss, so you can get like, you know, improved health markers, all that kind of things, you still have to consider this other side of it, where there's like potential risk for falling into these really negative headspaces around food. And one of the other things, I guess, that's maybe not as much of a risk, but you kind of touched on it there, Jordy, I think, is by doing this kind of thing, like it's a way to reduce your calories without having to really like think about anything or plan or like learn anything about nutrition. And so like, if you do it, you might be able to fast for like whoever knows how long. Like, it maybe if you're really good at sticking to it, like it'll last for you. But what we see, and a lot of the feedback that we get, is people are like, yeah, it's really great, I did it for like, you know, a month, 2 months, it worked really well, I lost a bunch of weight. But then once you get to the end of that time period, you're not you haven't learned anything about how your body works with nutrition and all that kind of thing. And then so you get to the end of it, and it's basically just like doing one of those like crash diets where you get to the end and you're like, okay, now I'm just going to go back to whatever I was doing before. You put all the weight back on, and then you're back at square one. And I think that's a real issue that people can run into as well, because then that can kind of lead into a bit of that like self-defeat and side of things as well. So I think if you are going to go about it, it's important to remember, like, yes, it'll work for weight loss and calorie control and the health benefits that come with all that stuff. But if you are going to do it, it's really important that you do it in like a safe, controlled way, ideally with someone that knows what they're doing, like with nutrition, and they can give you advice on, you know, what your requirements are, how to still be meeting those during the times when you are eating. So like we work with a lot of people where we'll do this, especially with athletes, you know, when they're in like Ramadan and these time periods when they have to be following it, like they have no choice to do these fasts. Like, how do they still fit their requirements in for their training and their day-to-day life, so that when they get to the end of the time period, they have the tools to like go back to like normal eating patterns that are going to support their lifestyle, support their health, and make sure that they're like able to kind of like continue them into the long term.
Yeah, something we need to touch on, because I'm sure most people, this is their first benefit, I suppose, they hear about, is the word autophagy. Doge, can you break it down, what autophagy is, and then why people think that there's this supposed benefit of it with fasting?
Yeah. So autophagy is it's kind of described as your body's sort of like cleaning process. So it's when you have certain cells in your body that will go through and clean up dead cells, anything that's not being used. So it's like the catabolic process that kind of goes on within your body. And there's a lot of like theoretical thought that like if you increase your body's autophagy, you're going to be cleaning out all the waste that's in your body. You can be maybe cleaning out some of the damaged cells that would turn into like cancer. And there's like ideas around fasting and then therefore like preventing all these long-term health conditions like cancer and heart disease and things that would happen maybe from like accumulation of dead or like damaged cells over time. And this is something that they've been able to demonstrate in like cell cultures in the lab, or like maybe in like rat studies and things like that, where they can make them fast for a certain amount of time, and then they maybe live like X amount of time longer because they've had this increased autophagy going on in the body. But the problem with this, and like with a lot of these like theoretical mechanisms that we see in a lot of diets that pop up, is while there's good evidence for the theory of them working in like these small controlled systems, once we take that and put it into like the human system, which is a lot more complex, it doesn't always translate. And there hasn't really been any good evidence to show that doing this fasting has any effect on this in humans, or any of these like preventative effects in humans as well. A lot of what they see in terms of like the health benefits, like we kind of touched on before, with like, you know, improving things like blood pressure, cholesterol, like the health biomarkers that come from like that improve from doing fasting, a lot of these are basically like one-to-one the same as what you would get if you just reduced your calories by the same amount over the week doing like a calorie restricted, just like a normal diet. So yeah, a lot of the theories are kind of like, oh my god, fasting is like this magical way to uptick autophagy and prevent cancer and all these things. Like, they sound really cool in theory, but the evidence just isn't really there at all in humans, or at least not yet. And maybe, you know, after doing way more studies, they'll figure out something. But for now, like, a lot of the benefits just seem to be related to what we were talking about, of just by capping the amount of time you can eat, you also therefore cap your calories, and you end up like doing essentially what is like a diet at the end of the day anyway, of just like reducing your intake.
Yeah, and that kind of moves us into the next point, where the proven benefits are exactly that, right? And I see this with a lot of clients that come through and they say, hey, you know what, like, I had a high cholesterol, or I had pre-diabetes and I used fasting and that was able to correct my biomarkers and my blood markers. And I go, yeah, I mean, that's amazing. Like, if this is the tool that's allowed you to do that, I completely support it. But like Dojo said, longevity is a real thing. You don't want to just do something for 8 weeks and then correct those biomarkers, because what are you going to do for the next 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years of your life to make sure those blood biomarkers don't go back to what they were? And that's where I take a bit of issue with fasting. Like Doge said, a lot of the time when people fast, they can do it and they'll get these results. What they're really doing is just restricting their diet, but they're not learning about what works for their body. They're not learning about how much protein is appropriate for them, how much carbohydrate, the difference between simple and complex carbs, and the difference between processed carbs and natural carbs, and how different amounts of those carbs can cause certain things in their body, and how fats have such a vital role, and how you should be able to distinguish between good fats and maybe not so good fats, and how much you should put in your body. You don't learn any of that when you go fasting, because all you're doing is restricting the calories, and you're getting the benefits that come with the weight loss that comes from that restricted calories. But by the end of it, you haven't really developed any real life skills that allow you to maintain that health. And this is where understanding your nutrition, understanding how many calories are appropriate for your body, for your lifestyle, and how to change that as your life changes throughout the different lifestyle stages is going to be so, so, so important to maintaining a good, healthy blood biochemistry panel as you get older.
Yeah, I agree. And I think as well, while we're talking about sort of the pros and cons, one of the things that some people might be sort of still wondering about here that we haven't touched on is going to be like, what is the effect of doing all of this? Like, yes, okay, we understand now you can lose weight, you can have these health benefits, there's the risks involved. But like, for someone who is maybe like an athlete and they're competing and they've got all this training to do, how can they fit fasting into this if they want to try it? Should they even try to fit fasting into their training? Like, what's your perspective on fasting when it comes to athletes?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think short answer is I don't recommend it. And that is because my personal position on it is that what makes you a better athlete is training. You rocking up to training, you getting through the training, and you being able to complete the training at the required work rate for the required amount of time to get the adaptation that your coach wants you to get. That's what makes you a better athlete. Nutrition fits into that by means of allowing your body to be in the best position to do that, to be able to work at the work rate that's required by you for the amount of time that you need to do it to get that adaptation. Now, pause that, go back 15, 30 seconds and listen to that again, because this is important, what I'm about to say. Nutrition does not do that exclusively for you. Going to training does that. What nutrition does is makes it a whole lot easier. For example, if you're going into a 2-hour session where you're going to be working at 90% of your VO2 max, 90 to 95% of the energy you're using for that session are coming directly from carbohydrates. Where are you getting carbohydrates in your body? we have about 4 grams, which isn't very much circulating in our blood at all times. And our body is very, very strict at keeping that 4 grams in our blood. So we'll use that up very rapidly. And then our body goes, oh, we need to maintain that blood glucose level. So it'll start breaking down our liver and muscle glycogen. And glycogen is our stored form of carbohydrate. So our body has a huge capacity. We can hold about 1600 calories in our muscles and about 400 to 500 calories in our liver. So we can break those sources down to ensure that our muscles have the required energy source to be able to complete the work at that work rate. And that's really important because if you are an athlete and you train for these extended periods of time, you'll feel the difference. You'll feel the difference if you're up in fifth gear for 2 hours and you've eaten a really high carb diet leading up to that point. You've topped up your muscle glycogen, your liver glycogen right before training. You had some sports drink and you peaked that blood sugar level. So now you've got a bit more than 4 grams. So when you start exercising, you'll start using that blood sugar first. So you've topped that up right before you start. You've started using that. And now that that's depleting, your body's kicking into your liver and start using your liver glycogen. Now that that's depleting, now it's kicking into its muscle glycogen. Now that's depleting. Now, when that depletes to a certain point, it's not like you're going to completely stop exercising altogether. What that's going to do is stop your ability to operate in third, fourth, and fifth gear. And if the goal of that session is to operate in third, fourth, and fifth gear, it's not going to be very productive. So this is where I sit down with athletes and I go, well, what are your goals? If your goal is simply just to go out for a morning walk or just exercise for the sake of exercising, and there's no performance goals, there's no development goals, and you don't mind feeling like hell while you exercise, by all means, fast, by all means, do it. But if you're a performance oriented athlete and you want to get the adaptations and you want to go into your sessions and get what your coach wants you to get out of it, you've got to go in there with these topped up muscle glycogen levels and you need to hit these work rates. And it's going to be a whole lot mentally tougher to be able to hit those work rates without the glycogen, because not only is there not a physical storage molecule that we're breaking down for energy, we know when that glycogen level gets lower, it plays on our ability to manage fatigue centrally. So our brain's perception of how stuffed we feel and how hard working out is gets far, far, far greater the lower our muscle glycogen gets. So that's why it's so, so, so important that you're going into these sessions and that you're doing them in a fed state, not a fasted state. I guess the other side of that is some athletes, some very specific athletes in very specific sports, say ultra endurance or endurance, Ironman, triathlon, marathon runners, ultra distance athletes, multi-day athletes, may benefit from doing some degree, and when I say some degree, one, maybe two of their sessions a week fasted, not for the sake that they want to suffer during those sessions, but metabolically, there may be some advantages of doing them in a fasted state in that our body will oxidize fuels differently. I can almost guarantee that if you are listening to this podcast, that is not you. Unless you are an Olympic level athlete in an endurance sport, or you're a very, very high performing athlete, which may be you. And if it is you, please reach out and we can discuss this more. Vast majority of people that does not apply to, because we don't even know for sure if doing these sessions fasted gives the metabolic adaptation that we're attempting to get by doing this. And the only reason we would attempt to do that from a nutrition standpoint is to give that athlete a little bit of an edge. Where does a little bit of an edge come into play? If you're an Olympic athlete and it's the difference between you getting gold, silver, or bronze. If you're an ultra endurance athlete and it's the difference between you making the national team or winning the world championship, that's when we're going to start trying these things. If you're just going to the gym 3, 4, 5 days a week, you absolutely do not need to worry about that. You need to be focusing on performing the best you can. You need to go in there fast. You need to go in there fed and not fasted.
Yeah, exactly. And that's such a good summary, I think, Jordy. So just to kind of like touch on everything we've talked about. So when it comes to fasting for the average person, if you're interested in trying it out and you're wondering, does it work for weight loss? Technically, yes. Would we recommend it? Only if you don't have these tendencies towards sort of negative relationships with food. And as long as you've got some sort of understanding or at least someone there with you that can kind of give you some guidance around what your requirements are and how to sort of navigate that with fasting. But in a general nutshell, for most athletes, as Jordy just said, it's probably going to be better off for your training to not fast, at least around training, to make sure you're going into these sessions fed full of carbs, unless it's like these edge case scenarios where you're an elite endurance athlete where there might be some potential benefits to training faster. But yeah, I think that basically covers everything to do with fasting. Geordie, do you have anything else to say for the listeners before we wrap it up?
I think, yeah, that if we just wrap this up really, really quickly from where the science stands, and I know where people will come from, because I have these conversations all the time where they go, well, I read a paper that said this and I read a paper that said this. But the way that science works is that we're going with what the bulk of the evidence says, and we want to focus our attention, like Dojo said earlier, on human studies, because the human metabolism is a far more complex system than, say, animal studies. Where we're standing right now, just recapping what Dojo just said so you guys get it in your brains, there's no difference between fasting and calorie restriction, i.e. being on a diet and eating in a certain way all throughout the day for weight loss. There's no difference. We don't have any studies that show, hey, if you fast, you're going to lose more weight compared to if you just be on a calorie diet, restricted diet, but you eat the same amount of calories every day. No studies that suggest that.
There's and a lot of- in fact, sorry, not to cut you off there, Geordie, but for the more nerdier audience out there that might be interested in this kind of thing, like I am, if you actually look into there's what they're called like meta-analysis studies, where they will actually pull together, because there's been so much research done on fasting. It's not like there's like still like new evidence coming out or whatever. They'll still continue to do it, but there's been a lot of research done into fasting, so much so that they have these studies out there which are called meta-analysis studies, where they get other studies, they pull together like hundreds of studies, and then they compare all of the results of those studies, and they can see whether or not the bulk of the evidence leans towards there being a benefit or not a benefit. And like those studies have been done, and they show that they just aren't able to find any sort of difference there. So yeah, so back to what you were saying, Geordie.
Yeah, and it's an important point, right? Because we're not making that point because we don't want you to fast. Like Dojo said, if you enjoy doing it and it's just practical for your lifestyle, absolutely do it. What kind of gets my knickers in a knot is when people come to this debate and they come saying that fasting is this panacea to health. And it's absolutely not. If you fast, that you'll get all these health benefits, and all you have to do is just eat within this eating window. You can eat whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. Doesn't matter if you're smoking and drinking on the weekends, if you're going partying, if you're not exercising, if your sleep is crap. As long as you do this fasting, all is good in the world. And that's absolutely not the case. And unfortunately, that is the messaging that gets pushed to a lot of people with fasting, that leads them to a lot of disappointment. So all we're saying is that from where we're sitting in the scientific seat looking at this objectively, there's no discernible difference in terms of your health or weight loss to fasting and having just a good calorie controlled diet. I think that's very, very important to understand. And I think the next point that I want to harp before we finish this is, if you are a person that tends to have a pretty bad relationship with food, I would say steer away from this. This is not something that you want to be going towards, because like I said in that example earlier, it can really end you in a bad place. But like everything, just be objective, look at the data. And if this is something you want to discuss more, like Dojo said earlier, and if it's something you want to do it under the supervision of a professional who knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
All right, Dojo, I think let's wrap that up there. I'm sure we're going to get a lot of slack for that episode, but that is fine by me. If you guys do have feedback and you do have comments, by all means, please reach out to us. Reach out on our socials at @_FitDietitian. You can find myself and all the team on there. If you want to have a discussion, by all means, drop in our DM, shoot us an email, whatever it is. We always love talking about this, but if there's any other topics you want us to cover on the podcast, please let us know. But until then, Dojo, thanks for another one.
Thanks for having me, Geordie.